We have our AI product, Norm, named after Norman Borlaug, that we released here recently. There's a lot of things that farmers have questions about, need a quick perspective on. We think this could be incredibly valuable for farmers and a key part of how they make decisions on their farm.
One thing that they told us the whole time, like, you know, the reason the Kardashians were so good was they put out like 95% of their life. Well, my dad, you know, all of us were like, well, we're going to put out 99% of our life. Like, we're going to, you know, we're going to show
everything. We don't lose at anything.
Everybody in person has been super cool and like loved the show. And like, it's honestly been really good feedback.
Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Ag News Daily podcast, video cast. What are we going to call ourselves?
Tanner, you've had this homework for weeks now.
Yeah, but we've been planting. It's been a busy spring season. I can't wait until you give us the results of what the planting progress report looks like. But how's Hawaii?
I wish I was in Hawaii. I'm unfortunately not in Hawaii prior to Tanner's beliefs here.
Hey, but there is some congratulations in order. It sounds like at the convention that you're at, had an award ceremony, and you took home a little bit of the hardware. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been at the National Agri-Marketing Association's annual convention here in Kansas City, and my team won a cool little piece of hardware there. But John Deere took the center cake, Tanner, with Brian Torrey there, their head of marketing, PR. He's got multiple hats he wears, but they did a really neat women-focused campaign through John Deere. They sent out in their ambassador boxes colored fingernail polish of John Deere green and yellow. I'm not sure I would wear that, Tanner, but kudos to them still nonetheless.
That's right. We were on site with Ag with Emma when she received her box, and that was exciting to see. What a clever campaign that way. Well, I don't know if it's raining where you are, but it's raining where I am. We've got more showers and thunderstorms in effect this evening, chances of precipitation of 90% with a half to three quarters of an inch possible. Tomorrow, Saturday, for most of the Midwest, we continue to see chances of showers and thunderstorms. The rainfall during the day Saturday will be the least amount, Delaney, of each of the next 3 days. Once you get into Saturday night, we've got thunderstorms rolling back into the area. New rainfall amounts could be up to 2 inches of possibility there. Showers and thunderstorms with highs getting back into the 70s on Sunday. The chance of precipitation on Sunday, Delaney, is an actual 100%. New rainfall amounts there could be another half to three quarters of an inch, followed by storms again recirculating in the evening. So Delaney, over the next couple of days throughout most of the Midwest and Corn Belt region, we're going to be seeing some soggy conditions with 2.5 to 4.5 inches of rain due in some areas. So maybe a welcomed sight to some, and others may not wish for as much.
Yeah, I know. We started planting earlier this week as well. I think my husband was a little thankful for a rain day here as they were hitting it pretty hard. But farmers across the nation hit it pretty hard over the last week, Tanner, as we saw finally double digits emerge out of the latest corn crop progress planting report. Even though rain may be sweeping through here over the Corn Belt as of April 21st, 12% of the nation's corn crop has been planted. That's up 6% from the week prior and well ahead of the five-year average. Corn has also started emerging in 7 of the top 18 states, but in 3 states, planters have yet to start rolling. North Dakota, Ohio, and Pennsylvania have not yet started their crop plantings yet, according to the latest report. So it'll be interesting to see if they get some of that wet weather you mentioned there as well, and if planters start to roll or not. But soybeans also saw an uptick last week at now 8% complete across the nation, up 3% from the week prior. Winter wheat has headed in 8 of the top 18 growing states, with conditions rated just 50% good to excellent, down from the week prior. And lastly, spring wheat progress is now at 15% complete in the top 6 growing states, Tanner. So it'll be interesting to see how much we may or may not progress here over the next couple of days as we see next week's report drop with some wet conditions, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I think the biggest advantage of next week's report is it's always a week behind, and there was a lot of progress made in the last 5 days. We've got some progress announced from DGI, the international launch of their Agris T50 and Agris T25 application drones. The T50 is a completely different league compared to what the former T40 was in, and it features now improved terrain following capabilities. It also has an increased flow rate and the redesign of their pumps, which now opens up various other applications that were not possible before. DJI continues to place a high priority on data privacy. They put farmers and service providers in control of their own data and its use, according to the company. The press release also shared the following data security notes that we want to pass along to you. No flight logs, photos, or videos will be synced to DJI without permissions, so it is not a default setting. Operators must opt in to share or store the data on a DJI server if they wish to. For users outside of the Chinese mainland, drone data shared with DJI are housed on US and European servers that are TLS protected. Operators can easily delete any data that they have shared through their DJI account or contact DJI support to help with that. So it sounds like a very high focus there, Delaney, put on data privacy. So that's some exciting news coming from DJI.
I know. I'm wondering how many farmers are going to be itching to get their hands on that latest technology, Tanner.
Yeah, based upon the trade shows that we've been at, there will be plenty lining up for it.
There certainly will. Earlier this week on Wednesday, Secretary Vilsack issued a federal order that dairy cows will now be required to be tested for bird flu before moving across state lines. This move is meant to try and contain the outbreak of avian influenza, or H5N1, from further spread to other cows. This order issued by the USDA will take effect on Monday and require every lactating dairy cow to be tested before moving across state lines. The USDA said they will be paying for the costs of those tests, but results could take up to a week, so it's important for dairy farmers to plan ahead. If a cow is tested positive for the virus, they will have to wait an additional 30 days and test negative before being allowed to move. Until now, the USDA has advised farmers to test dairy cattle before shipment, but it was not required. Those positive tests will also trigger additional requirements for dairy owners to disclose information to laboratories, state veterinarians, as well as reporting all positive tests to the USDA. In response to this ongoing avian influenza outbreak, Tanner, the U.S. has officially received their first notice from a trading partner that Colombia will now be halting all U.S. beef exports on beef and beef products. And so we'll see if any other countries follow suit here.
Yeah, hopefully that's not a domino effect for our producers and listeners. But we did see, Delaney, a New Jersey woman fighting for her life received an incredible gift from a pig last month at a hospital in New York. Lisa Pisano's combination of her heart and kidney failure left her too sick to qualify for a traditional transplant, according to the Associated Press. Doctors came up with a plan to implant a medical pump to keep her heart beating, and days later transplanted a kidney from a genetically modified pig. She is the first woman to receive a pig organ and the second known living recipient to receive a gene-edited pig kidney. Pisano, age 54, is recovering well and took her first steps this week. She told the Associated Press that she felt like it was a risk worth taking because if it didn't work for her, it might help the next person in line. So kind of a good feel-good story for us today, Delaney, to spice up this episode right here in the middle. So kind of neat to see the medical field pushing forward, combining with agricultural sciences. And then I did notice that they put the gene-edited pig or genetically modified pig in the text to make it very clear that this is safe.
Well, Tanner, the carbon market made some big waves this week as we saw two pioneers in the space share some pretty big updates. Good friend of the podcast, Mitchell Hora with Continuum Ag, shared earlier this week that their billion bushel challenge now had scored over 250 million acres since launching their initiative this past November. The company's announcement also shared that they're taking a slight pivot in their approach to get to a billion acres, and that the challenge originally started with them trying to make it kind of a friendly competition. So instead of it now being a competition, they're just trying to compete to score the most bushels and have a simplified and unified approach for farmers. With an estimated 6 billion bushels used for ethanol production next year, Continuum Ag said they're on a mission to help the industry score the first billion bushels in 2024, and they're over a quarter of the way there. They are also going to be updating everyone on where they're at to get that billion bushels on their website, topsoil.ag, if you have an interest in following along, or maybe you want to get your acres into that billion bushels. topsoil.ag, but Indigo Ag and Red Trail Energy, a North Dakota ethanol producer, also announced an exciting joint partnership to help facilitate and source corn with lower CI scores. Indigo Ag said they'll be leveraging their field testing to identify farms using sustainable practices that produce a low CI score and help Red Trail Energy source that corn from those farms. RTE's goal is to be able to take advantage of some of those low carbon fuel markets and utilize tax credits such as the 45Z to help farmers earn a higher premium, Tanner. So some big moves there for the carbon space this week.
That's right. I saw those headlines. Glad that you grabbed those. A quick survey, though, of animal science students at the University of Illinois revealed a dramatic change over the past 30 years. Fewer of them are farm kids than ever before. That means those students have little to no practical farming experience. But for those interested in the beef sector, a year-long hands-on research program is aiming to change that. The Illinois Beef Experience Learning and Industrial Exposure Fellowship is a 10-week summer experience where students work hands-on with beef cattle as they develop and execute a research project to present at the annual Midwest Animal Science Meeting. iBeLEAF was developed by the University of Illinois beef researchers as an elite and one-of-a-kind experience for students. Fellows in the iBeLEAF program began their experience with a three-day program and launch event where they learn about the beef industry and will complete necessary research trainings to participate in professional development activities and get to know the other students. They will begin a 10-week summer experience where they will work on a beef farm and develop a research project and begin working with the Illinois Extension Office. So what do you say, Delaney? Is it time for you to get enrolled in the iBeLEAF program?
I think I would have done it if I were in college. Tanner, what about you?
You know, I think that would be fun. I think it's just great, a stair step to get some with no practical farming experience into the program to be able to fully understand and advance their research.
Absolutely. Well, Tanner, we have two great interviews ahead for our viewers they don't want to miss. First up, we caught up with Dan English from Farmers Business Network to talk about their various finance and sustainability programs for farmers. But later on in the show, we're going to be airing part two of the conversation we had with Cole and Steve McBee from the reality hit TV show, The McBee Dynasty. So first things first, let's turn it over to our conversation with Dan. We're joined today by Dan English, the general manager of FBN Financial. And Tanner, as we were talking about earlier, we had a great conversation at Commodity Classic. We had some technical difficulties, so we're excited to have Dan back on with us and recording his video and audio this time to capture for our listeners. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be back in some fashion here.
I tell you what, it was so much fun, Dan. We had to do it two times.
Exactly.
Well, Dan, FBN has had so many exciting announcements recently, changes coming down. Now we're heading into planting season. I'm sure you've got all of these different things popping up for you. As you look at the 2024 growing season, though, this year, what has FBN most excited?
Well, I think, you know, for us, we're here to serve farmers. And so we've got a lot of great offers out in the market. We have 0% financing for new customers to FBN. We have a lot of existing customers who've already gotten 0% for the full year. Just, you know, if they have in-season purchases, they can come back and purchase. We've got a phenomenal delivery network that's already been in the process of delivering chemicals to farmers as they're kind of preparing for this year's plant. And then, of course, you know, always looking for new ways to help farmers. We have our AI product, Norm, named after Norman Borlaug, that we released here recently and is a great way for farmers to start getting involved with some of this new technology and test it out.
Well, let's first jump into the great financing opportunities for new members, because we know, as we've reported on many times here, that rates are continuing to be a sticky point for what farmers are factoring into their break even, especially for those that have to borrow. So let's outline that a little bit. What is that program for new members?
Yeah, it's, so customers who are new customers for FBN Direct, if they buy through our direct store, and we have some purchase minimums and things like that, but they can get 0% on that first purchase through FBN. So, and then it's not due back till, depending on which program they're in, either January or March. of 25. And so if they just need a little bit extra cash, if they want to try out FBN and have been looking for what's the reason to do it, you know, saving 7, 8, 9% relative to what they'd be paying if they were borrowing from somewhere else is a good way to get started.
Tanner, I always wonder when you hear something like that, it sounds like it's too good to be true almost when we see interest rates like this. But Dan, how are you guys able to provide such flexible rate spending right now?
Yeah, you know, we do it through a lot of ways to deliver savings to our farmers. But the biggest thing is, you know, we make some margin on the product and we expect these customers to be with us for a long time. So we're happy to invest in them, get them a good deal up front and look forward to doing business with them for a long time.
And are there ongoing benefits for those customers that have been working with you, that it isn't their first time buying from your store? How does that look for those as it continues to move forward in that relationship?
Yeah, so we do a great job of getting people, engaging with them kind of early in the planning cycle. And so a lot of those folks are already on 0% programs and got some of our best you know, prices back in Cyber November, which we'll have again, you know, this upcoming year as well for 26. So they have that. You know, they can also continue to draw down on those lines that they have with us to make new purchases that are still going to be at that 0% threshold if they qualify.
Dan, I can't even think about Cyber Monday when we're just heading into planting season.
I know
it's right around the corner for some growers. You know, as we look at some of the other major milestones that FBN has shared, I think the other big one that is just top of mind when you think about financials is also the way that FBN is now starting to work with some big partners, including ADM and farmers, to help really kind of provide that bottom line impact for some of the sustainability solutions we've really seen pushed here over the last few years. Talk to us at a high level about some of those partnerships and how did FBN come up with these ideas to help provide more to the farmers' bottom line?
Yeah. Well, this, you know, we have a unique perspective here at FBN. We're a farmers first company. We're not focused on the environment necessarily or grain trading or anything like that. We're here to serve farmers. And so our philosophy on these programs has always been, if there's a way for farmers to voluntarily make more money, that seems like a good idea to us. And so farmers can opt in, choose to do it and make some extra money. That's great. And so we're, you know, with our background as a Silicon Valley company and having great technical expertise, we really saw this gap in being able to do some of what's called the monitoring, reporting, and verification. So looking at farmers' data and being able to say, all right, this is, you know, this parcel has not been deforested, or this is the carbon intensity of this particular parcel, or they're using an appropriate amount of nitrogen to get the best environmental impact. And so it was really a great blending where, hey, we've got a lot of great customer contacts and farmer contacts. We have this technical ability to actually dig in and analyze this data and provide verifiable information to some of the grain buyers and regulators. And so it was a great nexus for us to sit in.
Wow, that definitely sounds like putting the power of a group to work for you. But you mentioned Norm right away when you did an introduction here. Tell us more about how you came up with Norm and what value that's going to bring to your members.
Yeah, you know, this was something that was spearheaded by our data science team. They saw this huge wave of what was happening in artificial intelligence, kind of in the, I wouldn't say the rest of the economy yet, because I think we're still seeing where it'll have the impact, but certainly the technological sector. And thought, hey, you know, if people can use this for, you know, shopping list, or people are using it for, you know, coding and a lot of different uses like that, there's a lot of things that farmers have questions about, need a quick perspective on, need to dig into some details. So we've been able to go through, categorize product labels. So if farmers are, you know, wanting to know about application rates or something like that, they can look to Norm. If they want to know about the weather in their area, the forecast, Norm can kind of pull that up in a quick, easy format. And so, a lot of different tools and uses that they can use for. Let's say they're facing a particular pest pressure and want to know what are some different products that they could use to stop that. They can go ask Norm. So it's a great way for them to engage, and, you know, still in testing phase. So, you know, you'll apply a little bit of common sense on this as well. But this stuff is improving at such a rapid rate that over time, in a relatively short period of time, we think this is going to be incredibly valuable for farmers and a key part of how they make decisions on their farm.
Delaney, I tell you what, I think that our forecast at the beginning of our episodes should be brought to you by Norm. I'm going to have to start you to get that together.
It seems like such a fun tool to play around with, right? During the, if you're bored in the planter, you just, you know, happen to have something you want to do. It seems like Norm would be a good person to have a conversation with when you're having those long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dan, as we look at 2024, what other exciting things can you tease for us that you are focused on here at FBN?
Yeah, you know, we're continuing to innovate here at FBN. That's kind of what we do. And so we're continuing to roll out updates to our AcreVision product. So for farmers who are looking to take a look at a parcel of land, understand what's the value of that land, what are some recent sales that, you know, as I'm thinking about how much is my land worth when I go talk to my banker, or, you know, how much should I potentially bid for this parcel? It's a great tool to do that. We're also continuing to roll out new products on the financial services side. So we've expanded our equipment offerings here over the last few months, and somehow have more options for farmers there. And then, you know, as we talked a little bit about the sustainability side, but we're partnering with ADM to help farmers get a premium for the soybeans that are exported to Europe. And so a great way for farmers to make a couple extra cents a bushel, and in some cases a little bit more if they participate early. So in a year when, you know, as you mentioned, Tanner, interest rates are going up and some prices are a little bit higher than they would have expected, and grain prices are lower, a little bit extra on the margin certainly helps out.
So I'm looking right now at fbn.com/financing. It says more than 2,400 farmers served, over $1.5 billion in funds committed, and you're saving farmers an average of 28%. That is not a small impact.
No, it is not. You know, what we've found over our time here is farmers have historically been served by their local banks and the farm credits, which have provided a great service and really kind of provided a lot of capital into rural America before there were, you know, other avenues to do that. We think, though, that, you know, there's kind of a new wave of technology that can help improve that experience, do a better job of delivering financing to growers at a lower cost in an easier fashion that's more technologically enabled. And so that's what we've bet on. And a lot of times farmers haven't gone back and gotten a, you know, competitive quote in a number of years on some of this. And so being able to come in and say, hey, this is what our rate is on real estate, this is what our rate is on operating. We have, you know, like everything here at FBN, transparent prices, so they can come in, use one of our calculators and get a quick price quote, even if they don't go with us, just to make sure that they're, you know, keeping their local lender honest. And so it's delivered huge savings for farmers. You know, back when rates dropped, we saw a lot of people at, you know, 3.5%, 4%. Unfortunately, those rates aren't around anymore, but a lot of folks, maybe instead of getting 3.5% from FBN, they got 4.5% from a local bank. Those might reset here in the next year. And so there's an opportunity for them to come back, take a look at us as those rates reset, and see if there's a way to save even more.
Fantastic, Dan. Well, before we let you go, remind us the best website or place to go if growers are interested in that 0% financing deal.
Yeah, if they just go to fbn.com/finance, they'll see the promotion right there at the top.
Perfect. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us. Thanks for having two conversations with us. I think this one was even better than the first, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, Tanner, a big thank you there to Dan for working through some technology issues with us as well. Originally recorded it with him at Commodity Classic, but I think that second conversation went even a little bit better.
Right. Definitely more timely for you as the listener and watcher if you are picking this up on YouTube. So thanks for tuning in to that segment.
Absolutely. But as mentioned, we have part two now of our conversation with Cole and Steve McBee of the McBee Dynasty. If you haven't watched part one or listened to it, I encourage you to go back to last week's episode first to get the full story. Otherwise, Tanner, let's dive in. So I've got to ask, on the TV show, there's lots of moments where somebody is caught on camera saying, we're going to lose the farm. This is bad. We're running out of money, right? And so I think there's been a lot of controversy and questions around the show. Did you guys do it as a way to pay back some of your debts? What was really going on at the farm at that time when, you know, we're seeing this on camera? What was going on?
The thing is, from a banking perspective and a financial perspective, we do cross-collateralize the farm against everything. So it's 100% real if you say, okay, we're using the equity out of one asset against building all these car washes. And anytime you start a new business up, like the car washes, I say it takes 2 years to even get to a cash flow break even. And we've got 10 locations and not one of them has been open 2 years yet. So there's always real pressure. I think that's one of the perceptions that, you know, you've got all these entrepreneurs or all these, not entrepreneurs, you have all these speakers on the internet nowadays talking about, you know, they're motivational speakers. Everybody should be an entrepreneur. Everybody should start your own business. They're all wrong. I completely disagree with that. Because if you're not a person that can work like outside of a schedule, and when I say that, I'm talking like not knowing how you're going to get payroll, not knowing if the next check's coming. Maybe you're going to have to go 2 months without a payroll check while you're trying to cash flow businesses. There is so much pressure, and everybody makes it like, oh, it's so, you know, this hero thing of starting your own business and doing all that. You better be like, there's a lot of people that aren't designed to handle that pressure and stress. It takes a very special, I believe that wholeheartedly. I mean, I've had my own company for 30 years, many companies, and I go get my blood pressure and it's like 94 over 62. And they're like, this is impossible. And I'm a high strung guy. I'm passionate about what I do, everything. I'm zealous. I work hard. I go hard. And when I do party, I probably party too hard, you know, but it's maybe not quite as often as they showed, but I go hard at everything. I know even my older son, Steven, he's like a lot of his mom's genetics. They don't handle that kind of pressure. Like when somebody's calling about this problem or that problem, every day there's 1,000 problems. People don't call me and say, Steve, we just wanted to let you know everything's going great today. Have a good day. No, they call me and say, the friggin' sky's falling. What do you want us to do? How are we going to handle this? And those are my days, one after another. There's some days I'm like, there is no way this many things could go wrong in one day. But then when we all get to dinner at night, I cook a lot for all the boys come over, probably 3 nights a week at least. They come over, we eat dinner, and I just go to sleep. And that's what Steven's like, I don't know how you do it. I can't. If one person calls him, he's undone for 3 days. But so, yes, to answer your question, it's very real. I mean, we've got a lot of businesses, a lot of new businesses. So there's always financial struggles. And everyone has a perception. Look at all these new trucks, or look at this, all this John Deere equipment, or look at this. They don't know all the pressures and stress of making payments, making payroll. It is 100% the truth. And just because you have more, you've got more debt and more problems and more, I mean, bigger problems. And so I would say that all of that, you know, tied together, there was nothing fake about that. Because if the car washers don't make it for some reason, you know, there's 70 million in debt now against all of them. You know, there's collateralized with other equity from other assets.
Cole, did you hear that? He wants you to call him and tell him you're just having a good day.
Yeah, I'll let him know. Yeah.
Yeah, please do that.
Yeah.
Please do that.
Well, and I think, Stephen, to your point about perception, right? There are some moments in the show where the perception of the McBee family maybe isn't warm and fuzzy, and it doesn't always paint out you guys in the best light. How do you respond to comments floating around the internet, people maybe seeing some of these moments that maybe are or are not realistic of how you guys are day to day?
Well, I think the answer to that is nobody's perfect, and we're the last people to judge anybody. Like, we aren't going to sit there and tell you what you're doing wrong. I mean, now if you're working for me and you're running a planner, I'm going to tell you what you're doing wrong. But if you're just some guy out there, you know, you're partying up, living your life, that's your life. We're going to let you do it. We're not going to judge anybody. That's your own life. You know, you deal with your own problems on your own. We're going to deal with ours on our own. But obviously, we put it out there in front of the public eye for everybody to see. And one thing that they told us the whole time, like, you know, the reason the Kardashians were so good was they put out like 95% of their life. Well, my dad, you know, all of us were like, well, we're going to put out 99% of our life. Like, we're going to show everything.
We don't lose at anything.
Yeah, right. I was like, we're going to show everything just because we want to be the best show out. Like, anything we do, we want to be the best at. So we're like, we'll just show everything. Like, we don't have nothing to hide. You know, we're not, anybody who knows us, we're pretty much an open book. I mean, I was going growing up, like everybody knew everything about me. Like it wasn't like it was a, we've been kind of an open book our whole lives. So people have been judging us for a while. We've kind of, the last probably 10 years, we've gotten pretty used to like the comments and the judgmental comments. It's been, I mean, close to home, it's been happening for a while now. So it's just a bigger area that's doing it now. And yeah, honestly, I'll tell you this. I thought it was going to be, like, I get on Facebook, you see some comments, you know, and I don't read hate comments. I don't get on there and just read through them. I laugh at them sometimes. I like to see what they're saying about him. But, no, but in person, I haven't had, like, one person come up to me and be, like, say, like, try to do any, say anything or try to fight or anything like that. Like, it, everybody in person has been super cool and, like, loved the show. And, like, it's honestly been really good feedback. All everybody's talked to me in person. Yeah. How about you?
And I have, you know, I say this a lot. I have a lot of different sayings. Some of them are on the show that have been out on TikTok. And I always try to tell the boys, you know, I want to shortcut their life, make it better from my learning curve. And, you know, we don't need to borrow problems. We've got all the problems we need. So we don't go out and add fuel to the fire or anything. A lot of those haters and people that say that, they don't even know us. It's funny because most of the time when someone meets us, they're like, wow, they're nothing. I mean, my dad would give you the shirt off of his back, and we're the same way. We're all about hospitality. You know, just because they see something, they see a snippet of one little clip of something, they make a snap judgment. And if there's one thing I could tell, give anybody advice out there, and I've lived long enough now at 52 to know I've had my own businesses for 30 years, is, you know, be slow to judge and quick to forgive. I very much was hard on people. When I was Steven's age, I was a lot like Steven. I was so motivated. And if you didn't work as hard as I worked, I didn't want you around me. I mean, I was go, 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 work, work, work. And I couldn't understand all these people that didn't want more in life, that didn't want to give their kids more in life, that, you know, so I was very judgmental and hard on people at a younger age. I'm like, I don't want to be around anyone that's not working like 24/7 like I am. I want, you know, birds of a feather flock together. I want to be around those same people. And I made a lot of, you know, harsh judgments that even my ex-wife, I love her to death, the mother of the boys, you know, give her all the due respect to her. I wouldn't ever want anybody else to, you know, contrary to our divorce, and everyone wonders what happened or this or that. But, you know, my point is I was hard on her. I mean, she'd be like, you haven't been home in 5 days. You know, can you make it home for dinner when the boys are growing up, other than because I coach football or whatever? And I'm like, no, I've got a business meeting. I've got to support these boys. I want them to have a better life than I had. I'm going to work. So I was very driven and very hard to be around. And I think as I've gotten older, I try to tell Steven, man, just because somebody don't think the way you think, it's okay. I mean, all people aren't the same, and they don't have to be. It wouldn't be the world we have today if everybody was the same.
Well, I have to say, you guys come off very authentic and genuine, especially having this conversation. We've been talking for almost an hour now, and I think that really comes through, maybe less so on the show because it's TV. But I do have to ask, you know, there have been rumors, there have been stories and things coming out now on the internet of some different court cases that have been filed against you, Steve. Can you elaborate on what's going on with that situation and maybe some of the repercussions that have happened within the ag space of being in this very public eye, and now that is coming to light as well?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're referencing as far as what court cases. I mean, I own like 15 businesses. I get sued every day. And it's funny because everyone wants to say, oh yeah, this happened. You know, I've had 10,000 employees, and I'll give this example. You know, I hire a guy, he tells me he can run a dozer, he can run a backhoe, he can run a drill. And he starts, and I said, okay, we'll start you at $18 an hour, give you a 90-day review. If you can do everything you said you could do, then I'll pay you 20. Well, he misses 7 days in the first 90 days, no call, no show. He can't run a dozer, he can't run a drill, and he can't run a backhoe or track hoe. And then he comes to me at 90 days when I should be talking about his termination, said, hey, you said you'd give me a $2 raise after 90 days. I said, no. We said, every deal, there's two parties. You can't have a deal without two sides. And that deal's based on both sides keeping their end. So there's so many things like with chemistry. We had a chemical company a couple years ago that had 100% guarantee. Like if the weeds were, if your fields were weedy, they come back, you get free chemical, like 100% respray, right? And then whenever our fields were weedy, they wouldn't provide us chemical. So like the warranty, so everybody sees one side of a story. And I mean, I could give you 1,000 of them from home building. I mean, and not the rent, but like building homes. I get a bid from three framers. We get a $10,000, an $11,000, and a $12,000 framing bid. I go with the $10,000. They have the drawings. They come back at the end and say, oh, I want 13 grand. They send me a bill for 13. I'm like, what are you doing? Well, it took me longer than I thought. I don't care. Every time it took me, I worked, my communications company, I worked for the biggest GCs in the country, J.E. Dunn, Mortensen. When I gave them a bid, unless it was missed, like it wasn't on the drawings, then it was a change order. If it was on the drawings and I missed it, I ate it. You had to. There's no choice. So when I say there's two sides to every story, he's like, well, it took me longer than I thought. I'm like, well, you guys showed up every day at 9, you left at 2. Yeah, you didn't get nothing done by the time you roll up. And it's just funny how that always works out in business. That's when people have never owned their own business, they should have a business school, a business class in school where people for a year have to manage their own. Because everybody that's just has been a worker, they judge every business owner. Oh, well, then why don't you take your checkbook and you give them $3,000 more? I could have got it done for 11 of people that I know and trusted. They gave me a bid. I paid them what the bid was. But then they send an additional bill. It's crazy. To me, it's so mind-blowing. But so I don't even look at those comments. I know that I'm fair with people. And the people that deal with me have dealt with me like 20 years. They'll tell you he's the best guy ever. I mean, I deal fairly with them. But that so a lot of that stuff comes up.
Let's just say I'm 24. And basically, as long as I can remember, there's been court cases, there's been things he got, you know, sued, he's been in different things, and we're still operating. We work through everything that ever happens. So no matter what it is, we get up the next day and we go to work. We don't just sit there and make a Facebook post about it like most people.
Yeah.
So Cole, you mentioned earlier, you know, before you went on the show, you guys maybe had a little bit of a social presence after Steven went on his reality TV show. Now I'm assuming your channels probably have blown up. People know who you are. You've put yourself out there in a very public way. What are you doing to use your public platform now to help advocate for agriculture and the greater rural communities?
I need to get better at ag. I need to get better at social media and promoting ag. I'm terrible at social media. I'm probably like the worst one out of all of us at posting pictures and keeping things. I'm just always so busy in the field. I never even, you know, they're always so busy, but I just always forget to even pull my phone and film anything or take a picture or post it. I'm just always working. And, but I think what we've really been doing, we're trying to transfer our farm page that has a lot more followers on it than I do personally. And, Hayden's been doing a really good job at coming out with a bunch of farm videos. And we're really trying to promote agriculture on our farm page and just try to keep people's eyes open to what the ag world is right now. And, I think Hayden's done an excellent job at that. He's our social media content guy, who runs our social media pages. And I think our farm page is starting to come along pretty good. And we're starting to get a social presence there that's pretty big. And so that's kind of how we're helping. You know, I think we're going to keep trying to, you know, open people's eyes to what's going on in the ag world and, you know, the big major world problems or any of the problems we're having right here in northern Missouri, you know, what's going on and how people can help farmers and, you know, how you can support farmers across the U.S., I think is what our plan is with that social platform.
For sure. Steven has been working with Hayden diligently on all of that, really trying to use whatever platform we have, as so to speak, of this from the show or whatever, to bring awareness to, like, you know, everybody says that, even you. Where do you buy your food at?
Well, we get a lot of our meat from the locker, but, you know, otherwise.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most people will say, oh, yeah, I want to support farm to table. I want to support. I don't want to, you know, get these, you know, ground beef that's at the grocery store that has. And it's a convenience thing. People are creatures of habit, so it's convenient. But more than that, they don't want to spend a dollar extra. I mean, even if, you know, they're like, well, Walmart has it the cheapest. Well, yeah, that's because everybody goes there. They've created this monopoly. And if you keep shopping there, you're hurting the small guys and hurting yourself, because what you're eating could be 40 different cows from 30 different countries all blended together, and all of their any diseases or any anything that they had. I mean, it's so when you know, buy from local people, where like what we're going to be preaching a lot about is the traceability factor, that you can really say, we know this story, we know this brand. Like, we want to, what we're creating with like McBee Meats is a true farm to table, but it's not just for us. We couldn't supply enough. So all of our people around us, all of our neighbors that are ranchers and farmers, that we can tell their story to and help give them a premium for all the work they do, instead of monopolizing like the big four that own the beef industry.
Yeah. Well, what our whole end goal is, our plan for the meat facility, what we're really working towards is we want to be able to, let's say you get a steak from us and you order it online, it shows up. Well, there's a QR code on the top. Well, you can scan that and then you can see, oh, this steak came from the Jones family in Southern Iowa or Northern Missouri. And you can see that the Jones family has been raising cattle for 80 years. They're a second generation farmer. You know,
they'd be like a fourth generation.
Fourth generation. Right? Yeah. 80 years. Fourth generation farmer, but you know, whatever. But, and you know, what medicine you gave that calf, what, you know, as it was growing up, when it was born, you know, where it was born at, how, where it was raised at throughout its life, you know, what all it ate, you know, every single thing that happened to that cow. So that way, when you're eating that meat, you don't know, like, you know where it actually came from, you know, who raised it, you know, what they did to raise it, you know, what it ate, you know, what it did, you know, if it was grass fed, grain finished, you know, what it was, where you wouldn't know that if you just go pick it up from the local grocery store.
Absolutely. Well, I think the last question I have is there going to be a season two?
They're saying that they're saying yes, that they're coming. They've already given us dates. So July, August, September. So they want to get into some of the harvest because they were here during planting season. And so they're saying yes.
We haven't got confirmation yet, but we hope so. The way it's looking, we think so. So we're getting excited.
Well, I hope to see more maybe of this farm side of the business and maybe less of the drama. Hopefully you can put a good word in for that and continue.
We all have.
Yeah. We'll send notes to the editors. But Cole and Steve, thank you guys so much for joining today. Certainly appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for having us on. It was great talking to you.
Well, we appreciated having them on. Delaney appreciated you taking the time to have that conversation. But where do our markets look this week?
Well, Zinner, I wanted to kick things off this week with the cattle on feed report that was released last Friday, which reflected somewhat stronger cattle on feed numbers than anticipated. According to the USDA, the cattle on feed report for April 1st reported there were 11.8 million cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market, which is 1% more than the previous year. Placements in feedlots during March totaled 1.75 million head, 12% below 2023 numbers. Regionally, local sale barn prices continue to remain at some of their most elevated levels. Six weights this week reported in from various locations ranged anywhere from $250 to $400 plus per hundredweight. And Tanner, last weekend I was at a sale barn in Lexington, Kentucky, and I tell you what, it is just crazy. Even a, you know, newborn baby calf is going for a couple hundred dollars a head. So these cattle markets are certainly heating up.
That's right. And ahead of next week's Federal Reserve meeting, the Fed Fund futures trading gave 99.7% odds this morning that it would see no rate change next week during the Federal Open Market Committee meeting. They will discuss the possible monetary policy changes there. That percentage, Delaney, is up from 96.5% yesterday. Traders only gave 14% odds now as of a June rate cut and only 39% odds of a July rate cut. But a September rate cut is still expected. So if you are a betting person, maybe September's the month to put your money on.
Well, Tanner, I tell you what, the money has certainly been putting it on this week in the red, hard red winter wheat markets. They closed for their fifth consecutive trading day higher on Thursday. And as we take a look here at the overnight markets, just a quick peek before things really open up on this Friday, they are, once again, looking like they're going to open higher here. So is there a potential rally ahead of us? Well, too soon to say, I think, for sure. But wheat certainly stole the show this week in the grain markets. Corn and soybeans, still a little bit of range-bound trading here, a little lackluster excitement until we really get into the heat of the growing season, Tanner. But that's a quick look at this week's market activity.
yeah, it'll be interesting to continue to keep an eye on everything. Listeners, we certainly appreciate you hanging out with us. Let us know how we're doing. Give us an idea of the conversations that you want to hear and the people that you want to see now that we're incorporating video. It is a pleasure to be on this with Delaney, even though we're not together. So it'll be fun to get her back in studio. Delaney, are you excited for next week?
I'm excited. We've got a really good show ahead of us, and I think we're going to have some special guests in the studio, so that'll be even more exciting.
It'll be a lot of fun. Listeners, thanks again. We appreciate you. Follow us everywhere that you get your content. But what do you say for today, Delaney? Should we let them go?
Let's let them go.